Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
He's the man Talkers Magazine says is one of the most important talk show hosts in America.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
He's Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. It's my pleasure. If you just tuned in, I'm glad you did that. Thank you. Thank you for the business. Thank you for the food and the clothes and the car and the vacations. I heard people take those. I'm going to try that one of these days. Welcome back. And if you've been listening already, we consider that a sign of high intelligence. You're going to be glad you did, because our good buddy Mike, David Dossi is back with us. David is the intellectual property attorney of our Brain Trust. And he is a patent attorney with Gallagher and Dossi, which is an intellectual property organization out of the great state of Ohio. David Dossi, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. It's always an honor to be here.
It's good to have you back. And by the way, folks, interest of full disclosure, but also mainly as a point of pride for me, David is my intellectual property attorney. He does a great job. David, I'm going to throw you a curveball. You didn't know I was going to talk about this.
Okay.
We, in a minute, folks, we're going to talk about the myths of patents. But we're in the middle of the Olympic season. And we got all these. We got Michael Phelps and Nastia Lukin and others that are coming back with a neck full of gold, and they're going to turn that gold into real gold, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Through endorsements and through different things. So, explain to us what part of what's going to happen to them is intellectual property.
Well, most celebrity athletes, you know, develop a brand, and their brand is typically built around their name and the goodwill associated with them.
And their face. Could just be their face.
Exactly. And obviously, the more famous you are, the easier it is for you to protect your intellectual property, being your name. And what you'll see is a lot of celebrity athletes, one in particular, I know a lot of the golfers like Tiger Woods, Arnold Palmer, they mm-hmm. have incredible trademark portfolios because, yep. as you can imagine, that's what they're licensing. You know, every time someone buys a Nike hat with Tiger Woods' logo on it, well, he gets a, you know, a little chunk of change. Mm-hmm. And so most celebrity athletes, if they have good agents, they start building their intellectual property portfolio before they get famous. So their agents are essentially betting on the success of their athlete. Mm-hmm. And that's primarily what you see is if you have a good agent, that these athletes are developing trademark portfolios years before they become household names.
Mm-hmm. So when you hear about these endorsements, folks, when you hear about the opportunities that Michael Phelps and the others are going to have, that's intellectual property. That's their asset that they're going to leverage in the marketplace to make them a living, right?
Well, and think also, when you watch those swimmers, you know, or even the track and field people, they always have either Nike jerseys on or Adidas jerseys
right.
on, and that's just another example of good product placement and advertisement all off of a simple trademark.
Right, right. And of course, those are before the fact, but then once they get the medals, and they now become much more in demand, then they can go after other companies that are unrelated to their sport, like you know, maybe a rental car, an insurance company, or Wheaties, or whatever it might be, and they can go after those companies, and they leverage their intellectual property. So this is all part of the intellectual property landscape that these young people are playing in.
And an interesting side note on the Olympics, there was a lot of hype around that new swimsuit, the Speedo
swimsuit.
Oh, yeah,
swimsuit. Yeah, yeah.
And I just saw the other day on a website, they did some commentary on the patent application of Speedos related to that swimsuit design.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is fascinating stuff. And most people would think, come on, swimsuits, you can't patent a swimsuit. You know, people have been wearing swimsuits for eons, but
Did they patent the design of the swimsuit or the fabric, the application of the fabric?
It was actually a utility patent on the function of the swimsuit, and it was about the construction of it and how the different panels are assembled. And I would have never realized how many different little panels are strategically placed in locations of differing strengths to get that body position and hug the person just right.
Well, in fact, it was so controversial that some people there was some talk of considering it to be a mechanical advantage.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about
possibly even banning them or something.
Yeah, swimmers changing at the last minute and dropping endorsement deals just to use it.
Exactly. Yeah. So, intellectual property, folks, is everywhere, including in your business. When we come back, David, didn't he do a great job? He had no idea what was going to ask him. I told you, this guy's smart. And we're going to talk about some of the myths of patents when we come back after these messages. Twin Tail, stay with us.
Turn around and see you in a crowded place. What's good the emotions on the God?
Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. Please check them out. Use them to your advantage. We built them for you so you can have a maximum opportunity to be successful. No charge, no barrier to entry if you can get there. We'll let you come in, hang out with us, use our stuff. Smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. David Dossie is our guest. He's all over both of our websites, and he's contributed so much to us over the years, helping us understand intellectual property and how we have it, how we're creating it, how we secure it, these assets, these intellectual assets, how we secure them, and how we defend them. And so, David, there are a lot of myths out there wandering around on patents, aren't there?
Oh, absolutely. Not a day goes by that I don't have someone come in the office or call me and, they say it so confidently because they've heard the myth so often. It's like they're educating me on this myth. You hate to upset them, but they look totally deflated when you tell them that that is not true.
So let's get into some of these myths. I'm going to give the myths and you can tell us what the fact is.
Okay.
Here's myth number one, folks. Our company only uses the old technology, so I don't have to worry about patents.
And the fact is, old technology can still infringe a patent because
infringe on someone else's patent.
Exactly. Yeah. Patents can last 20 years, so you have to consider what may be an old technology can still be protected. And in a lot of technology areas, a patent may not be a viable technology till it's 10 years into its life because they're so advanced. And we hear this most commonly when we have like an old school manufacturing company. All of a sudden they get sued for patent infringement and they think, what is this? You know, we've been making these, truck parts for 50 years in a similar fashion. But the main thing is old school manufacturing companies are around for a long time and are old school because they are always making improvements and tweaks and each one of those improvements, whether it's a product improvement or a process improvement, may be taking them into the realm of someone else's intellectual property.
And so all of a sudden, from one day to the next, they make this one little upgrade and it puts them over the edge into something that somebody has patented, even though they, in their mind, they've got possession of it because they've been doing it. All they did was make one little adjustment, but the truth is somebody else nailed that down with a patent, and now they've wandered over into their property.
Right. They view it as a minor little tweak or a minor improvement, and next thing they know, they're in a lawsuit. And the common reaction is they'll come in and say, how can they have a patent on that? Or that company should never have been granted a patent. And unfortunately, when you're at that stage, those arguments, to make those arguments is costly.
Mm-hmm.
So a little research on the front end can often avoid a lot of cost on the back end.
So folks, be careful what you do as you wander into something. And of course, the big challenge is when you start leveraging something and trying to resell it, right? I mean, it's not. If you're doing it inside your operation and you don't know that you're infringing, and you're just, it's just basically the way you're conducting your operation inside your walls, that's one thing. But when you start, turning it into a product and selling it, that's when it becomes visible, isn't it?
Right. And, you know, what you often run into is a lot of engineers inherently have the kind of scientific mindset, and they're humble. So the minor improvements that they're making, they don't view as being real breakthroughs.
Well, see, that's the problem we got with small business owners. They don't think that they've got real intellectual property.
Right.
Yeah. It's the same thing. Okay, let's talk about number two. I never copy other products, so I don't infringe on anybody's patents.
Right. That's a common misbelief, that if I'm not out there buying the competitor's product, disassembling it,
right,
seeing how it works, and then modeling mine after that, that I must not be infringing patents.
Besides, and, I'm an honest guy.
Exactly. And the cold hard fact is, knowledge is not an element for patent infringement. You can very easily spend years of R&D to develop a great product, and that product may have been patented by someone else 12 years ago, you know, and so a patent can be infringed without knowledge of the patent or the patented product.
So, and ignorance of the law is no excuse. Is that what you're
exactly,
saying?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, here's another one, folks. Most of my products are only improvements on existing technology, so patents which are patents that are not available to me. Now, what does that mean?
Well, that's basically what we just touched on, is the fact that you don't need a major breakthrough to obtain a patent. And most small businesses often think that these minor improvements, you know, they play that modesty card. It's not a big breakthrough. It's not critical to the product in the
end. Like the swimsuit.
Right, right. And bottom line is, larger companies that have larger budgets, you know, they're aggressively trying to obtain and acquire intellectual property, so they will chase down what a small business might consider a minor improvement. The big business might consider a smart investment, even if it is just a minor improvement, because they can use it to, you know, push that small competitor out of the market.
Mm-hmm. All right. Here's another one. Having a patent or being patent pending will ensure the success of my product.
Right.
And you're not talking about the success as a patentable item. You're talking about the marketing success?
Commercial success.
Commercial success. I
right.
Mean, yeah.
I'm always surprised the number of people that believe that if you build the field, people will come.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't happen.
It only happens in movies in Iowa, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly.
Quick break, 10 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. David Dossi is our guest. We'll be right back.
Sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away.
We're back. It's 7 till. Little Chicago bringing us back. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. David Dossi is our guest, and he's our intellectual property attorney with the law firm of Gallagher and Dossi out of the great state of Ohio. Give us your website, please, David.
It is invention-protection.com.
And when's the book coming out?
Still working on that.
Still working on it. All right. We expect you to launch it on this show, though, David.
If I ever do, I will.
I want to come back to this question of, now that I've got a patent, I should be successful, commercially successful with it. A patent is just a legal document. It has, the marketplace is indifferent to patents or no patents, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, being patent pending or having a patent to put on a product and market a product might give you a leg up, but it definitely ending up with a successful, commercially successful product is infinitely more work than is required to obtain the patent.
If customers want what you have, then the patent or patent pending could help you. If they don't want what you have, nothing can help you.
Right. Having a patent number on a bad product isn't going to make it sell.
Exactly. As what do they call that? Lipstick on a pig? All right, let's move over to the next myth here, folks. Describing my idea in a registered mail letter to myself will protect me. Some people get the idea that they can write this thing down their idea and seal it up, send it in a registered mail to themselves, and never open it. And then if somebody infringes on their patent, then they can pull it out and prove to the courts that they had this idea way back when.
Right. Yeah, that's commonly what people will call the poor man's patent. And we'll have people come in and say, well, I did the poor man's patent. And I tell them, well, you know, if you're a court's going to look at this, and they would say, if you're smart enough to create something that has value, you're smart enough to be able to mail a lot of envelopes to yourself, steam them open, put whatever you want inside 20
right.
years later, and then
right.
seal it again.
Right.
So those documents are useless.
And same thing for copyright, too, right?
Right.
Yeah, no, I had heard that. I've heard that all my life. If you want to copyright something or whatever, prove that you wrote it or thought of it or whatever, mail it to yourself, et cetera, et cetera. But that's a myth, right?
Well, copyright's a little different. And copyright and the myth surrounding copyright and fair use of copyright on the Internet is a whole other set of myths that maybe we can talk about some other day. But, you know, because copyright does exist as soon as you put something in written form,
mm-hmm.
it's then a matter of, if you're smart, you invest $35 to federally register it with the Library of Congress.
If you care about it that much, folks, spend the $35. Don't count on a postmark.
Right.
Right, David? All right, what about this provisional patent? What are the myths surrounding provisionals? Is there even such a thing as a provisional patent?
There isn't, and that's why
it doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist, and that's why even I see commercials on TV for these legal services with a famous attorney who's promoting the service, and he'll say, "We can help you get a provisional patent."
I haven't seen that. Somebody's actually trying to sell something that doesn't exist.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you've seen these services where they're quasi-legal services that will help
right.
you incorporate.
Oh, yeah, no, I know about that.
You know,
yeah.
those type of things. And one of them also does some intellectual property work.
Ah.
And they'll say provisional patent, but there isn't a provisional patent. There are provisional patent applications. And a provisional mm-hmm. patent application never actually becomes a provisional patent. It's essentially just a placeholder that allows you to file what some people refer to as a real patent application within 12 months. And that non-provisional, or a real patent application, is what is actually examined by the Patent and Trademark Office.
Mm-hmm.
So a provisional patent application is filed with the Patent and Trademark Office, but it's never looked at, it's never examined. To actually end up with a patent, you have to file another application. So that's a myth we hear. People will file a provisional patent application to get to the quote-unquote patent pending status, you know, as soon as possible, and somehow they infer that they have a provisional patent.
Right, right. All right. This last myth is about copyrights. What does that mean?
Well, copyright, if there's ever an area of intellectual property surrounded by myths, it's copyright, because you hear that if I only excerpt one chapter out of a book, it's not copyright infringement, or if
mm-hmm.
I only take so many words, or if I only sample a song with, you know, one chorus or this, that, or the other, it's not copyright infringement. And there is no mechanical test for copyright infringement. There's no way to just add up a number of words. So the whole issue of fair use and copyright infringement is a very interesting subject,
and it's surrounded by myths. It's surrounded by myth, but also some subjectiveness, too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so you got to be careful, folks. Hey, David, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
It's David Dossie, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back. I will be, too, in the next hour. I'm Jim Blasingame. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.